Unified School District Board of Trustees, June 8, 2009. On behalf of the trustees, I'd like to thank you for attending tonight's board meeting. As you can see, we have a packed room and a full agenda. Tonight, as with past several meetings, we will limit speakers to 1 minute for a total of 20 minutes per agenda item. In the interest of hearing from a broad range of constituents about various topics, we have selected cards randomly based upon topics. If you do not get a chance to speak this evening during public comment section, you are welcome to speak at the end of tonight's meeting or submit your comments to trustees via email. We kindly ask that all in attendance this evening maintain a respectful, business-like decorum. To allow for a maximum number of speakers, we ask that members of the audience refrain from distractions of holding up signs, clapping, or speaking out. If you agree with the speaker's comments, we ask you raise your hands to concur. Thank you for understanding. Please hold the signs in your lap. They may not be held up as they distract from the vision of people behind you. We do see the signs. I understand, and I probably know what most of them say, so thank you for bringing them, but that does help everyone to be able to participate in the meeting. Thank you. The meeting is called to order. Mr. Maddox, Lopez Maddox, could you lead us in the pledge, please? Consideration and adoption of the agenda. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda? And a second. Roll call, Ms. Bowes.
President Adonisio.
Here.
Trustee Matt Winston.
Here.
Trustee Christensen.
Here.
Trustee Brick.
Here.
Trustee Bryson.
Here.
Trustee Lopez Maddox.
Here.
Trustee Palazzo.
Here.
Student Advisor Chase Ishii.
Thank you. At this time, I wish to pull an item out of order. Item number 31, employment contract, interim superintendent. Ms. Hatchell?
It is with great pleasure this evening that I introduce our new interim superintendent, Dr. Bobby Mahler. As you have just heard, she has been appointed our new interim superintendent of the Capistrano Unified School District. I'm assuming that's correct, trustees?
We'll vote first. How about?
Well, let's vote then before I proceed. That would be in order.
We have a motion to approve the contract for Dr. Mahler.
I second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes 7-0. You may
continue.
Thank
you very much. Appreciate that. Dr. Mahler, will you please come forward so we can meet you? Dr. Mahler brings with her an impressive 42-year tenure in public education. She started her career as a school cafeteria cashier in Saugus, California, and retired as a district superintendent of Centralia School District in Orange County. She was a teacher and learning coordinator in Downey and Fountain Valley school districts, served in a variety of administrative positions, including that of principal in the Irvine Unified School District, and has taught at the undergraduate, postgraduate, and doctoral level at a variety of private and public universities. She was interim superintendent for Westminster School District and currently works as a consultant for the Orange County Department of Education. We look forward to having you join our team, Dr. Mahler, and tomorrow she will officially begin her tenure as interim superintendent. Would you like to say a few words?
Thank you, trustees, for allowing me the privilege of working with you and all the wonderful people in this room. And to have the opportunity to lead Capistrano into a stable future that coalesces all of our various stakeholders. I am very humbled. I didn't know so many people were going to come to meet me tonight. But what I do sense seriously is that it is a pleasure. I am eager to start work with such a passionate community. The best thing that can happen to kids is to have parents who advocate for them. You are their first teachers, and then we get to have them at the time that you afford us that luxury. And I can't make a lot of promises because I don't even know what's going on totally yet, but I do promise you, and I promise you the board, that I will give you my personal best, and I will work very diligently to earn your respect, your trust, and your respect and trust. And I am eager to work with everyone who wants to coalesce and move forward. Thank you.
Now to a report of closed session action on items 35A, 1 through 3. The board accepted staff recommendation 7-0 on those three items. Item 35A, 4 through A, 18. The board accepted staff recommendation on a vote of 6-0 with one absent, Mr. Lopez Maddox. Let's see, item 35C, liability claim. The board voted 7-0 to accept staff recommendation on a rejection of a liability claim number 09-73398DP, minor claimant. That ends the report from closed session. We begin into open session now. Ms. Hatchell.
We have several introductions that we'd like to make this evening. Our first, of course, was Dr. Mahler. Our next introduction is of our new Interim Deputy Superintendent of Personnel Services, Mrs. Naomi Suinaka. Mrs. Suinaka, will you please stand?
Hey.
Mrs. Suinaka officially joined us on May 29th after a long and successful career in the L.A. Unified School District. Mrs. Suinaka served most recently as an administrator for the LAUSD Office of Staff Relations. Throughout her career, she has held the positions of an elementary school teacher, principal, and bilingual coordinator, among many others. After working with her this past week, I can attest that we will certainly benefit from her organization, sense of humor, and quick wit. Naomi, it is a pleasure to welcome you to the CUSD family, and we look forward to working with you. And Chase, would you like to introduce our new student advisor to the board?
I'd be honored. It is my great pleasure to introduce our 2009-2010 student advisor to the board, Mr. Sam Ali Khani. Sam has been the intramural commissioner for Dana Hills ASB. He served on school site council. He was captain of the basketball team at Dana, a consistent superintendent's honor roll, a member of National Honor Society, as well as the California Scholarship Federation and the Principal's Advisory Board. And Sam, if you'd like to step up to the podium and say a couple words.
First and foremost, I'd like to thank Mrs. Palazzo and all of the other ASB presidents for choosing me as student advisor, and I would just like to let everybody know that I will work to the best of my ability to advise the board on the students' positions, on all of the problems and the other issues relating to students, and I will give my full effort to representing all of the students of the CUSD school district. Thank you.
Welcome.
And Sam, before you step down, I know when I came into this position, it was really difficult just getting into the swing of things, figuring out what's been going on, because a lot of the issues have some past history. So I got you a little gift that hopefully would ease the transition. And it is the agendas from all the meetings over the past year.
Oh, man.
Adonisio and Vice President Winston, can you please come forward for our next presentations this evening? You just heard from our Student Advisor of the Board, Chase Ishii, and I'd like to ask you to come forward, Chase. Ishii is described by his principal as being a leader among his peers, serving as ASB president this year at Capistrano Valley High School, as well as our student representative to the CUSD School Board. Chase has been involved in ASB student leadership throughout high school, while also being designated as an AP scholar with distinction. His other accomplishments and leadership positions include posts with the National Honor Society, Cougars for Character, California Scholarship Federation, and Fellowship of Christian Athletes, just to name a few. Even with all of this, Chase is extremely active in community service and volunteer work, both locally and while visiting Cambodia, Kenya, and Rwanda during his high school career. Chase was recently honored as Capo Valley's Senior Cougar of the Year and will be attending Stanford University in the fall. And Chase, we got you a clock to remind you of all the time that you have spent with us this year. And on behalf of the staff and trustees here, thank you so much for your contributions. We really appreciate it, and best wishes to you next year. Would you like to say a few words?
I had no idea I was going to be honored, so I didn't prepare anything. But One year ago, I eagerly stepped foot into this room and in turn my new position as student advisor to the Board of Trustees. Adorned with both enthusiastic dreams for the future and my lucky yellow shoes, I approached the board and was told where to sit. However, I wish I had been told to buckle up and keep my hands and arms inside the cart, as if that would somehow in some way prepare me for the unforgiving twists and turns that lay ahead. But I sit here today a stronger, more mature individual because of these trials. I was honored to have been handed the responsibility of influencing an entire school district through real-life politics, complete with real-life opposing views. Through this position, I've learned the emotional composure it takes to express personal views while also seeking to understand conflicting opinions, all the while maintaining a sense of integrity and altruism directed towards the good of the entire community. I've seen the courage and perseverance it takes to make difficult yet unavoidable decisions in the face of criticism, and for that I applaud the trustees for their ability to maintain their composure in such a position. They make decisions for the district knowing full and well that they will be tried face-to-face by the constituents they serve, with no White House phone lines or state capitol letterheads to hide behind. Ultimately, the most rewarding part of this position has been seeing the interest and initiative this year has instilled within fellow students. It has broken the walls of apathy as we witness teachers, parents, and most importantly, students express their views on how they believe the district should be governed. My position becomes much more rewarding and efficient when I witness regular people standing up and demanding to be represented themselves. It has been a difficult year due to the financial crisis we have been thrown into, and many unpopular decisions have been and must still regrettably be made. But as I leave this position in the Capistrano Unified School District, I urge the board, the community, parents, and students to maintain composure in the face of crisis, determination in light of overwhelming pressure, and joy in the midst of troubles. Progress will never be made through separation. We must bridge the individual differences of the district in order to celebrate the individuals. And this can only be done through patience, understanding, forgiveness, responsibility, and integrity. I thank you all for this amazing opportunity and wish everyone the best of luck with the upcoming school year.
Our next honoree is Catherine Casabianca. Catherine, will you please come forward? It's not easy for many of us to make it through an entire year of perfect attendance, let alone 13 years. Catherine is the only senior of Capistrano Unified's graduating class who has demonstrated the phenomenal accomplishment of advancing from kindergarten through her senior year without missing a day of school. She is described by the administrators at her high school as a delightful young lady with a positive attitude and persistence. Catherine holds an impressive 3.57 grade point average and is a member of the Tesoro Marching Band and auxiliary groups. Next year, she will be attending Saddleback College. Congratulations, Catherine, on your outstanding achievement. We are very proud of you. Catherine, is there any, I'm sure this came with a lot of support from family and friends. Is there anyone here that you would like to introduce tonight? Sure.
It's my parents, my old dad, and my boyfriend, Peter.
Thank you very much. And finally tonight, I'd like to ask the president of CUEA, Vicki Soderberg, president of CSEA, Rhonda Whalen, and president of CUMA, Dr. Rob Nye, to come forward. We have 48 employees with over 1,213 combined years of service to CUSD who will be leaving us at the end of this year in retirement. It is the wisdom, perseverance, and loyalty of these employees that has made CUSD into the successful school district that we are, achieving the status of the highest performing large school district in the state of California. May I extend a heartfelt thanks on behalf of the CUSD staff and trustees to each of our retirees this evening. We wish you great happiness and continued success as you enjoy the fruits of your labor. Will each of you please come forward to be recognized as I call your names? First, we have Maureen Riley. Maureen began in 1986 and is a buyer for the district. Next, we have William Cunningham. Mr. Cunningham began in 1973 and is a science teacher at Dana Hills High School. We next have Nancy Eschen. Nancy began in 1974 and is a teacher at Barcelona Hills Elementary. We have Leslie Gersten, and Mrs. Gersten began in 1984 and is a teacher at Hankey Elementary. Next, we have Judy Gilmore. Judy began in 1987 and is retiring as a teacher at Wagon Wheel Elementary School. Next, Susan Hill. Susan began in 1977 and is a teacher at Concordia Elementary School. I'm not sure if Mary Wilmot is here tonight. She wasn't able to check in, but Mary is our most senior employee here with over 40 years of experience in the CUSD. She is retiring, having started in 1969 at Ambule Elementary. Next, we have Brad Smith. Brad began his career in 1984. And is retiring as a math teacher from San Clemente High School. Next, Jay Sponigal. Mr. Sponigal started in 1983 and is retiring from Capitol Valley High School. Next, we have Sandra Wilbur. Sandra started in 1989 and is retiring from Chaparral Elementary. Next, from our management team, we have Cheryl Bond. Yay. Cheryl began her career with CUSD in 1998. She is the principal at Bernice Eyre Middle School. And last but not least, we have Yvette Lively. And Yvette joined us in 1990 and is retiring from Transportation Services as our school bus driver. Thank you once again for your outstanding years of service to CUSD.
And next up, we have student body reports from both Dana Hills and San Clemente High School. I'd like to call up first Zach from Dana Hills.
Good evening, trustees, guests, and family. My name is Zach Kirsch, and I'm the student body president of Dana Hills High School. As you may know, this summer, our ASU got together to reevaluate what was going on at our school. We ultimately decided to create a new value system with our two main goals of student involvement and creating more school spirit. This past year, we have made great progress towards reaching that goal, especially in our second semester. Air guitar, always as a huge success, attracted even more people than usual. As a community, we got together representing our students, parents, teachers, graduates, and residents, involving anywhere from SOCIA, HMO, TRAC, ASU, special education, programs, and teams, all in one event called Air Guitar. This was a huge success, and we felt that we definitely succeeded in bringing everyone together for one of our most important events. In our last prep rally, we had the Battle of the Sexes rally, which provided healthy competition between boys and girls. It was a uniting force among the students, in which the girls ultimately won the competition, but the event provided sportsmanship and endless school spirit among both the participants and the observers. Lately, we had the Win a Formal and the Prom. The Win a Formal was held at the Camp Pendleton, as usual, but more importantly, Prom was held at the Grove of Anaheim, which is a top-ranked prom destination site in California right now. It was held on May 16th. It was a huge success, and ultimately, the upperclassmen were ushered down red carpet towards karaoke, delicious foods, and finally, dance floor. This year's prom will be one of the most memorable events for years to come, and ASU once again feels that we united the upperclassmen and gave them lasting memories of Dana Hills. As graduation comes closer and closer, it has caused a lot of reflection among the ASU seniors. We have ultimately accomplished our two main goals of student involvement and school spirit. We are proud of all that we have achieved this year, and we hope that in next year and in years in front of us, ASU progresses even more. And also with our president-elect, Jeremy Lin, as well, he's right over there, and we hope that he leads our ASU to be like it was this year. And I'd like to thank the trustees, Fred Adzenizio, Chase, and everyone else, and all the supporters of Dana Hills High School. All of our events have been fantastic this year, and thank you.
Thank you, Zach. And next up, I'd like to call Brian from San Clemente.
Madam President, trustees, and distinguished guests. My name is Brian Ivey, and I represent San Clemente High School. In the months since I last spoke, we have had a wonderful winter formal, an environmentally aware spring sports assembly, an air guitar show featuring a fully choreographed Slumdog Millionaire dance routine, a student body uniting blood drive, a girls' soccer state championship, a national champion dance team concert, a spring musical, and just last Saturday, prom at the beautiful Disneyland Hotel. And when Principal Duarte asked me into his office today to offer him some constructive criticism, he also wondered what I enjoyed most about this year. Now, I know that as board members, all of you understand the perspective of a leader. In a position that requires, or rather demands, interaction with others, you come to realize how many people you may have otherwise misinterpreted. My position as president has given me a renewed perspective of the student body, and especially what that comes to mean at the end of 4 years. As I stand here tonight, for the last time, I would like to leave all of you with the comfort that San Clemente High School is and will remain a family. For all high schools adhere to a similar schedule of events and can tout equally noble accomplishments, but what remains incredible to me is our school's ability to break boundaries and support each other in difficult times. Yes, there are cliques. Yes, there are problems, but there's also a sense of unity that one can only feel from within that body. This is the perspective I want to share with you. High school is an awkward and transitional period, but isn't every point in our lives a transition to somewhere else? San Clemente High School offers every single student an opportunity to find his or her voice. I suppose I find mine amongst 300 strangers. What have I seen in the past few months? I have seen Alex Dunn come home from Jordan after running from the USA national team. I've seen Laura Stoyanova get into Harvard University and Richard Garcia prepare for West Point. I've seen the avid students garner scholarship after scholarship and the best buddies dance and air guitar. I've seen this speech, the one I'm delivering now, for what it's supposed to be, a general update on school-wide activities, but also what it needs to be, in my belief, is a full-time... It's a time for all of you to hear from someone in the thick of it, to be informed of the things that you can't see every day, the little things that students cherish. Now, along with the successes, I have also seen the rejection of students from colleges in such a competitive and financially strenuous year. But all those things have passed. The end of the year, at least for a senior moving forward, has almost a magical quality in that the panic and the burdens are lifted. It's a time for reflection and friends, a time for acceptance and enjoyment, which brings me to the importance of activities as a whole. Yes, I understand that under this kind of pressure it may seem irrational to argue the relevance of assemblies and extra events. The high school is an experience. I am completely aware of the cutbacks and realize that next year may not allow for formal or air guitar, but I sincerely hope for the opposite. School is a time for work, but also for friends, and our events bring us together. They make a school more than just hollow brick, and I have seen that firsthand at San Clemente. I am so passionate about this school and once again honored to represent it. Thank you.
I did tell, promise all of our retirees and honorees tonight that they could leave after the special recognition, so if we could give them the opportunity, President Adebisio, to do that, that would be wonderful.
I can imagine they would not want to stay for the entire meeting, but if someone would like to leave, now would be the time to depart if you'd like to do so before we begin the rest of our meeting. Thank you for coming. Mr. Mark Sarver, followed by Alex Dinsmore and Katie Calkins. Mr. Sarver. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm here on behalf of a community that was to be known as Pacifica that's essentially now an abandoned project that's up on the hill here. We were a group that was supposed to be approximately 416 homes. To date, they built out 54 homes, and essentially once that was complete, the builder, the developer, and the financial backer have all filed bankruptcy and are no longer in existence. We're being held to a Melrose tax that was originally designed to go towards a bond that was going to offset the infrastructure burden that our community was going to pose on this community. To date, we've put in over $260,000, and we were told by the staff that they have no intention at this point or no ability to issue this bond. When we asked that they look at possibly an abatement or holding off or some sort of reduction in those taxes until such a time as it becomes a viable community again and a bond can be issued, and we were essentially told that we'd have to continue to pay the full burden of the full tax. So I'm here tonight asking that that be reviewed. The Melrose tax, I believe, is 98.1, and there's some additional points to that, but I see my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dinsmore?
I'm also a resident of Pacifica San Juan, and we have many of the 50 or so families that have that bought into what was to be the community. And I just want to echo what Mark was saying, that you know, we met with the staff, and they clearly made it aware that they have the ability to alter. But unfortunately, it seems like we're going to be held accountable for the sins of SunCal, the developer, which is essentially hiding in bankruptcy. And so we just ask that you look at this from the perspective of the 50 or so families that are doing our best. We bought in knowing that we were going to have to pay Melrose, but again, just being, since they aren't going to really school programs, it's just to some of these projects that SunCal was supposed to do, primarily roads, we ask that you send it back to staff to be reviewed again.
Thank you. Katie Calkins, followed by Stacy Tran and Dr. Ron Lackey.
My name is Katie Calkins, and tonight I would like to speak to you about counseling. In my 10 years as a public school counselor, my most sacred responsibility was that of student advocate. I advocated for students who were struggling to meet their highest potential, students who were not in accelerated courses but should be, students who wanted to go to college but couldn't afford it, students who entered their first day of school unable to speak a word of the English language, students who wanted to go to Stanford, Cal, or UCLA, students who were bullied, harassed, sexually harassed, raped, and or physically assaulted, students who were addicted to drugs or alcohol, students who were runaways or were kicked out of their homes, students who were suicidal and needed to be hospitalized, students who were pregnant, students who were struggling with their sexual identity, students who mourned the loss of a loved one, students with eating disorders, depression, mental illness, students who trusted no one and kept secrets from their families and friends. As a counselor, I advocated for students when there was no one else to stand up for them. Who will stand up for them when their counselor is gone?
Stacy Ballman Tran, followed by Dr. Ron Lackey and Linda Mamet.
Just pause for a second. Madam President, I thought the third speaker was going to be speaking to the Melrose issue. Can we have staff report back to the board on the details on that?
This has been an ongoing issue. Yes, they will report. Yes, we have several other speakers on this issue.
Yes, I'm Stacy Bauman Tran. I'm a small business owner, veterinarian, and homeowner in Pacifica San Juan, and I'm talking about the Melrose issue. And the biggest issue is, of course, not should we pay the Melrose at some point. It's just really right now is not the right time. We have only approximately 10 kids that go to Capistrano Unified School District. So what this means is the $266,000 is going, it's $26,000 per student to go to Capistrano Unified School District. I mean, that's more than the most expensive private school. So we don't have a problem paying what we should fairly and justly pay. And according to the resolution document that the school district signed with SunCal, it specifically says that that it should be to offset any burdens that the community puts onto Capistrano Unified School District. How can 10 students be a burden? And that's just what we'd like the board to consider.
Thank you. Dr. Ron Lackey, followed by Linda Mamet and Lee Holmes. Dr. Lackey.
Good evening, board members. First of all, I'd like to welcome Dr. Mahler. That's a welcome opportunity for her and for all of us. The reason I'm speaking is I was given the chance to attend the Orange County Special Education Community Advisory Council Advocacy Forum, which was held down at the Orange County Department of Education on Saturday, May 30. I had the chance to meet representatives of most of the school districts in Orange County, and it was refreshing to see the input that those committed personnel from the various districts presented, and hopefully I'll be able to continue participating and continue to participate with, along with our own representative, in attending those meetings. Thank you.
Linda Mamet, followed by Lee Holmes and Sherry Salado.
Board of Trustees, I am another resident of the Pacifica San Juan community. Unfortunately, I do not have children. We would very much like the opportunity to address further with the staff members the Mallory's tax that we are charged. And as my other neighbors have spoken about, the key points are that we are a small community. At this time, there is no opportunity for future development in sight with all of the bankruptcies that we have been affected by. The Mallory's tax is significant, and we would very much appreciate the opportunity to discuss it further so that we can come up with an equitable and proportionate amount for our community members. Thank you.
Thank you. Lee Holmes, followed by Sherry Salado and Sally Graves.
Good evening, Madam President, trustees. My name is Lee Holmes. I'm with Marsh, and I'm here to respond to some comments made at a May 11th board meeting, which mischaracterized certain matters regarding Marsh. I think you all have the document in front of you that I prepared for this presentation, so I won't go through all the details, but I would like you to review it. The assertions or implications during that meeting was that there were recent indictments against Marsh from the state of Connecticut, among others. That is untrue. There were indictments dating back to 2005 involving a select group of people in our New York office, none of whom have ever been involved in the servicing of your account. Your account has been continuously serviced in the 10 years I've been your broker through our Newport Beach office. How did we do during that time? We reduced your rate 40% for your excess workers' compensation. You now have a workers' compensation rate equal to or lower than your peers, and we just recently saved you $70,000 in a claims review. Our goal is the same as yours: save money so you can continue to educate your students as well as you do and pay your staff appropriately.
Thank you. Sherry Salado, followed by Sally Graves and Shahraz Talley.
Thank you, members of the board. Tonight, my comments are directed to Shireen Smith. Shireen, George Peabody wrote, "Education is a debt due from present to future generations." And from the moment I met you, you've inspired me to pay my debt forward. When I served as PTA Council President, you spoke passionately to others regarding education, and your passion is contagious. As a district employee, I've watched you mentor administrators, teachers, and classified staff. You listened, you asked questions, and then you guided us. While always keeping your eye on the big picture, you reminded us daily that we are here for one reason only, and that's the children. In the past several months, when many of us have been down, you reminded us that we needed to continue to pay our debt forward. You're one of us, Shireen, and along the way, you have met many people that are privileged to call you friend. While I realize that you possibly have one more meeting to attend, I wanted everyone to know these things about you. You are my mentor. You are my friend. And while I speak only for myself, I think I can safely speak for those, for most everyone in this room. You will always be part of the CUSD family, and you will be greatly missed. Best of luck to you on your new adventure. Our loss is Fullerton's gain. Thank you.
Sally Graves, followed by Shahraz Talley.
Adonisio and fellow trustees, my name is Sally Graves. I'm a resident of Laguna Niguel, a parent of two alumni of CUSD schools and employee of the CUSD for almost 20 years. The reason I'm here this evening is my complete and utter disappointment in every single one of you. I am appalled that three of you attended a preview of a documentary bashing CUSD schools, the very schools you represent, and not one of you could find the time to attend the California Distinguished School Ceremonies on May 29th, where four CUSD schools were being recognized as outstanding schools. I was even more shocked that the board members representing those areas of the schools receiving the awards didn't even have the decency to attend. Ms. Palazzo, weren't you the one a few months ago carrying on about the California Distinguished School plaques? If it was so important to you then, why didn't you attend the ceremony? If you can only attend events bashing our schools and not attend events praising our schools, why did you run for the school board? Why are you sitting at the dais claiming to represent our schools? Shame on you. On a positive note, two of our amazing district administrators did attend. Thank you, Suzette, and thank you, Shireen, for showing your continued support of our schools. It is a sad day for CUSD when Suzette and you, Shireen, will no longer be here. Thank you for your many years of service to CUSD. God bless you both. You will truly, truly be missed. Thank you.
Shahraz.
Good evening.
Followed by Dara. I'm sorry, Dara, I can't say your last name, but... You may proceed.
Good evening, distinguished trustees, Madam President. My name is Shaza Talia. I'm a member of the San Juan Pacifica community. I am also here pleading with you to reevaluate the Mullerus tax. When you look at the resolution that seven of you passed in 1999, September 13th of 1999, the underlying reasons were that we all had great expectations that this beautiful community would be built and that it would be built and people would come, families would come and children would come. And those children would either have to have a private school built for them or they would impact your school district. At that time, it made sense to impose the Mullerus tax. It would have been a righteous thing to do because those children would have impacted your budget. At this point, the 416 residential units that you stated that you estimated would be in existence at build-out do not exist. We are 61 homes. Only 55 of them are occupied. We only have 10 children that go to school. If you do the math, that comes to over $26,000 per child. That's a public school charging higher than a private school fee. So I'm asking you to reevaluate, and I'm available for further comment if you should need to speak with me.
Thank you. Dara Deshbach? Dara Deshbach? Followed by Jerry Ditto.
Good evening. My name is Dara Deshbach, and I live in San Juan Pacifica. And I am going to say, and I'm here for the same reason that everybody else has been, and all the details and the facts I've given you. The only thing I ask you is to look at is if you put yourself in our places, and if you were one of the homeowners in the area that we are, and the amount of money that you pay for the services that you're really not going to get, and you're not planning to get for a while. All I ask you is do the right thing. We have no problem paying and contributing to the district for the right reasons and the right amount, but at this point in time, the amount needs to be reevaluated. So I ask you to reevaluate this situation and please bring this back to a reasonable conclusion so we all can stop wasting money and time for everybody else. So thank you.
Jerry Ditto.
Good evening. In our family, we value commitment. We have volunteered countless hours in our kids' schools, yes, even when it was inconvenient. And when it comes time to recognize and celebrate the achievement of our goals, we are all there with our members of our community to celebrate and show our thanks and pride to our family, our community, and our school. And that's what our family did when our daughter was nominated to receive an academic award this year. We showed up. Well, sadly, none of the trustees felt compelled to show up. to celebrate with the hundreds of parents and students who attended the once-a-year, and for some families, once-in-a-lifetime event known as the High School Achievement Awards. Despite his name on our program at San Clemente High School, Mr. Winston had another agenda that night. Was this a politically motivated decision? Is your calendar too difficult to manage, or did you just think that not any of us would notice that you didn't show up? Well, we noticed. What message does this choice send to our parents, teachers, classified staff, and worst of all, the students of your district? What are your priorities? Instead of taking $300,000 out of the district and making it an anti-CUSD movie, shouldn't you just have given the money back? It's not like you earned it or deserved it.
Thank you. That concludes oral communications. We move on now to the consent items, item number 1 through 24. Do we have any board members pulling any items number 1 through 24? Mr. Christensen.
I'd like to pull number 11.
Number 11. Any others? We do have a blue card on item number 1 before we move to approve this item. Ms. Soderberg.
President Anizio, board members, thank you very much. I'd like to call your attention to the minutes in my hard copy. It's on page 5. It's a decision made at the last board meeting on May 11th. This is an insurance broker services agenda item number 29. I notice everyone's flipping, so like the good teacher that I am, I don't start till everyone's on the same page. At that time, it was moved by Trustee Bryson and seconded by Trustee Maddox and carried unanimously to award the insurance broker services for excess workers' compensation to Keenan & Associates. Since that time, subsequent to that May 11th meeting, I wrote the board a letter on May 19th. I sent actually the letter to President Andonizio and sent copies to all the board members, giving you some added information, not knowing whether you had this information about the lawsuit that is currently being brought against Keenan Associates by the County of Santa Clara, the San Francisco United Unified School District, the San Francisco Community College District, and the Tuolumne Joint Powers Authority for bid rigging, price fixing, kickbacks. In fact, the exact same charges that were leveled against Marsh, the company you voted to eliminate. Most troubling is the fact that Keenan is fighting this lawsuit in the state of California with a defense that they have no responsibility to reveal such practices to their clients. I am assuming that you did not have any advance knowledge of this lawsuit, or you probably would have eliminated Keenan all along. Additionally, as I cautioned in my letter, that perhaps unbeknownst to you as well, there was an unsavory appearance of potential conflict of interest, as Mr. John Stevens, Vice President, Property and Casualty of Keenan, had donated $1,000 to the recall committee, the committee from which this each board member received some kind of endorsement as well as campaign donations in the form of flyers. My concern regarding the potential for the appearance of impropriety has since heightened since I wrote the original letter on May 19th, as I learned that Mr. Stevens, hosted a meet and greet at his home for the then candidate Sue Palazzo and Ken Maddox in the June 2008 election. In addition, I have learned through a request of public information that Mr. John Stevens, although he did not sign in at the register of the district office reception area, did accompany the Keenan representative charged with the administration of the workers' compensation contract when that representative met with Mr. Jeff Bristow on May 22nd. Why the Vice President of Property and Casualty was part of a routine business meeting for workers' compensation contract is confusing to me. Mr. Stevens is actively campaigning for the current trustees in the June election, and the willingness of this board to award his company business does not bode well for the trustees. As Trustee Winston said himself during the election in October 2008, CUSD must, quote, ensure that there are no more cozy hidden relationships. We wholeheartedly agree. I would like to believe that if not all of the board members, at least some of you are unaware and would, in the interest of transparency, accountability, honesty, and integrity, restart the bid process anew. As is the closing of my letter on May 19th, I thank the board in advance for your attention to this very important matter, and I anxiously await your written reply. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Trustee Bryson. The attorneys who filed the suit against Keenan have been jailed for improper conduct, for breaching their responsibilities as legal advisors, and for attacking corporations with no basis. Continue with the consent calendar, items 1 through 24, excluding item number 11. Do we have a motion to approve? Trustee Bryson moves to approve. Do we have a second? Trustee Brick seconds. Roll call, please, Ms. Bowes.
Trustee Brick. Trustee Bryson.
Yes.
Trustee Palazzo.
Yes.
Student Advisor Chase Ishii.
Aye.
Trustee Christensen.
Aye.
Trustee Lopez Maddox.
Aye.
Trustee Winston.
Aye.
President Adonisio.
Aye. The consent calendar carries 7-0 with the exception of item number 11. Mr. Christensen, item number 11.
Yes, this particular item for produce bidding went out a couple months ago, and we pulled it last a couple meetings in order to have another bid put out to see if we could get a better price. And the bid came back from only, I think it was the original distributors that did the produce before, were the only ones that actually bid on this item. And there's one of the companies that did not give a bid, which is a pretty substantial company in Orange County, the Ingardia Brothers Produce. It had stated in this that that they did not want to incur the expense of fingerprints and for background checks. I called Mr. Sam Ingardia, the owner of this company, because it just didn't quite ring true, or maybe possibly that's not all the information. I wanted to find out what the reason was why he would not give the bid. And this, the meeting that I had was kind of indicative with other, the way we prepare RFPs for different things. I know that sometimes RFPs are put in such a position where only one company can actually bid on it. That used to be a problem with the waste management company. This, I think, is kind of in the same realm of things. I asked him, I said, well, why would you not want to have your employees fingerprinted or have background checks? And the way it's stated in the bid is that each employee who would ever drive to the district, and there's about 13 drop-offs, would have to go through Homeland Security. They would have to be fingerprinted. And he says that, you know, that's just something that's not possibly, it can't be done. And in order for him to do that, he would have to lie. There's a certification that you would have to write that you would do this. And he says it's just impossible. A company cannot do that. And so he refused to give a bid on this because he just didn't want to incriminate himself and to make a false statement. And he doubted that any company could actually do this because the way scheduling is, you just can't make sure who's going to be going to what place, someone gets sick, or, you know, just, you know, you're going to 100 different places in one day. It's just an example of how I think we need to look at the RFPs a little closer. The Ingardia Brothers company, I have heard that they are like, they're the Mercedes of the produce companies. They get to the best restaurants in Orange County. They do other school districts. And they're able to do their RFPs where it doesn't exclude companies like this. And to be honest, these are the kind of companies I would want CUSD to work with, the ones that have the strong ethics that won't possibly lie on a form in order to get a bid. I just want our staff to look at these items closer in the future, and not just the produce, but just everything that's going out for an RFP. Talk with the other school districts, find out why they're having very good operators. You know, how are they doing their bidding processes, so that they can get these very substantially fine companies, whereas we're sometimes ending up with a pinto of the different businesses. It's probably too late to go back to this particular item. And I know that staff is stretched in many, many different directions, but a couple phone calls before these go out to RFPs to see how our other school districts, Saddleback, Newport Mesa, how they're doing things, and before we actually put it out there so that we don't end up with a one-company bid, because that doesn't help this school district, and we need to get the best companies here. So that's pretty much it.
Are you prepared to move to approve the item?
If we disapprove this item, I assume we don't have time to go back out. So I move that we approve it.
Second? Do we have a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Item number 11 passes 7-0. That ends our consent section. We move on now to the discussion action portion of the meeting. We have item number 25, a public hearing. I have something I have to read here. Item number 25, the public hearing is now open regarding the approval of the reading language arts waiver for grades K-8. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board on this item, number 25, the waiver? There being no speakers or written comments, the public hearing is closed. Any further discussion by the board? Any discussion by the board? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I beg your pardon. This is a roll call.
Trustee Brick.
Yes.
Trustee Bryson.
Yes.
Trustee Palazzo.
Yes.
Student advisor Chase Ishii.
Aye.
Trustee Christensen.
Aye.
Trustee Lopez Maddox.
Aye.
Trustee Winston.
Aye.
President Adonisio.
Aye.
The resolution passes. 7-0. The waiver passes. Move on now to item number 26, which is also a public hearing. School facility needs analysis. This is the time and place designated for the public hearing on the school facilities needs analysis, adopting alternative school facility fees for new residential development in compliance with accordance with Education Code Section 17620 and Government Code Section 65995. I declare this public hearing is now open. Have any written comments been received? Do we have any written comments? We do not. Thank you. Is there anyone present who wishes to comment on this item? There are no comments. The public hearing is now closed. The board will now entertain a motion to adopt the resolution entitled Resolution of the Board of Trustees of the Capistrano Unified School District approving a school facilities needs analysis, adopting alternative school facility fees in compliance with Government Code Section 65995.5, 65995.6, and 65995.7, adopting responses to public comments received and making related findings and determinations.
I move.
Motion by Trustee Bryson. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Trustee Brick. Second by Trustee Brick. Do we have any comments or discussion by the board? Mr. Trustee Winston.
Thank you. Mr. Lebs, are there any applications currently pending with the school district for new developments?
property?
No, I don't believe so.
Is this
nothing more than a house here or there?
If building permits are pulled, is this when the fees need to be paid?
Yes, that is correct.
And at some point, does that trigger the school district taking a look at the development and getting involved?
No, this is how they mitigate their school impacts if they're not within a Melrose area.
And they pay money to who?
They pay this at permit issuance, I believe, through the city collects it, and then we get it from the city.
Okay. And is the school district involved in the planning process for that project at any point?
Probably, well, not on the small scale, but in the large planning communities, you know, like when the specific plan is being worked on, then yes, we would be involved in that process. But at this juncture, when it gets down to the point where they're actually building the home on an approved lot, they're just paying their fee.
Okay, so this applies to single lot rebuilds and
it would apply to additions over 500 square feet or construction of a home on a new lot.
Are these fees that you're asking for approval here tonight typical, if you know, throughout the state? Are they low? Are they high?
Every school district has to go through a calculation process to determine whether or not they can collect this level 2 fee, and we are one of those districts that meets those criteria and are able to collect that. This is very typical across the state.
Is this a source of revenue for us right now?
It is a source of revenue for facilities only. It can be used to mitigate the impacts of student growth.
Is there a stream of income on these fees right now?
It's very, very. It has trickled down to a minimal amount.
Even before it's been raised?
We haven't been collecting much developer fees compared to what we were several years ago, just because home building has slowed so much.
All right. Is passing this going to have any impact on future home building, do you think?
Probably not.
One way or the other.
This fee is actually relatively low compared to what fees were across the state several years ago.
Is there a mechanism, do you know, for developers down the road to come in and make a case for lowering this fee?
You can always make a case.
Okay.
But we've done our homework and we've gone through the analysis, and the fee is basically pretty limited on how you can determine the fee. And so you follow that calculation and that process, and that's what's been done this evening.
Right. Okay, thank you.
And just a point of interest, the Building Industry Association is aware of this, has looked this over, and doesn't have any issue with it, which is always good.
I did not hear anybody complaining, so I think that's true. Thank you.
Trustee Christensen.
I just need to inform you that due to my position in the industry, I have to abstain from voting on this.
All right. Any further comments? Roll call, please.
Trustee Brick. Trustee Bryson.
Yes.
Trustee Palazzo.
Aye.
Student Advisor Chase Ishii.
Aye.
Trustee Lopez Maddox. Trustee Winston.
No.
Trustee Adonisio.
Yes. The item passes. The resolution passes. Item number 27, potential sale of surplus property, Aliso Viejo site. Mr. Lips.
Madam President, members of the board, I believe this is our seventh amendment. Hopefully it's the lucky seventh amendment to extend the escrow period for the sale of the Aliso Viejo site, which is adjacent to our northern transportation facility. Kerry Brockman is here this evening, our Director of Facilities Planning. He'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have specifically on this agreement, but I believe that basically it's just rolling the dates forward to extend to provide us with additional time to try to get this project moved through, or for the developer to get the project moved through the city and approved.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. There has been some difficulty with the city of Aliso Viejo on getting their approvals, but they do have a plan, and that is attached to the board item. And it is a specific schedule that we expect to adhere to and get this through.
Thank you. Any comments by the board? Do we have a motion to approve?
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion carries 7-0. I beg your pardon. Oh, Mr. Maddox, 6-0. Item number 28.
CSEA reopener. Does the board have any comment? Board have any comments on this? Item number 28. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The board is accepting a motion to approve. I'll make a motion.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Item number 29 is our tentative budget, and we have, I don't know, 150 cards. Actually, not quite so many. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yes. Audience, keep your signs down, please. Mr. Lips.
Thank you, Madam President. Corey, you can go ahead and bring that up. Okay, thank you. Well, I kind of lost count on the number of budget presentations that we or conversations that we have had. I believe we're on our either eighth or ninth conversation this fiscal year. What a year when you really look at what's happened with the budget and where we've been. I have with me tonight Christopher Pittman, our Executive Director of Fiscal Services, and together we're going to walk through where we are in the budget, try to give you an update and prepare the board and the public for the adoption of the budget, which is scheduled for the 22nd. So what we did tonight was try to take all of that information, synthesize it down to a few sheets, and we'll go through and hit the high points. I do want to take a moment up front to just acknowledge the hard work not only that staff has done in preparing preparing the budget information this year, as we've constantly been revising this, but also the work of the Board of Trustees in the face of some very, very difficult decisions. One word that I have used more this year than I've ever used in my life is the word ambiguity, and it seems to be what we live in with regard to the financial condition within the state. And then as that filters down into the district, not only our district, but other districts across the state. And in the face of that ambiguity, I think the Board of Trustees has done an exceptional job of staying ahead of the curve. When it comes to the budget, they took the hard road. They identified $25 million of cuts early on in April. I think that set us up to be in a much better position as we come into budget adoption now, in a position that's probably somewhat enviable of a number of other districts across the state who hadn't stepped that far forward. The board has encouraged staff to maintain conservative fiscal practices and policies. We've done that. We did the hard job of clamping down on expenditures and tightening purchases, which affects classroom. That goes straight to things such as pencils and chalk and erasers and whiteboard markers and paper and copies that go right into the classroom. That hurt. That affected us. That was painful. But what that did is it set us up to be able to endure the cash flow challenge that we've been faced with by making those tightenings. The board has also, over the years, as well as even in this difficult year, has made those cuts, made those decisions so that we can meet our AB 1200, which is our multi-year projection solvency requirements. The district and the budget that we're presenting to you this evening, we'll be able to sign off on that and meet those requirements. Not that we don't have a hard road ahead of us, we do, but you have maintained that process and maintained those policies and kept the ship afloat. What's interesting is multiple times we have heard from the board, please plan for the worst case scenario. We have done that. The board has stepped in with that recommendation. We have followed that path. And as you'll see on this next slide, that worst case scenario that we planned for has continued to worsen, which has made it very difficult for us to budget in light of that. I think we all breathed a big sigh of relief when the 18-month budget was adopted in February. And we thought, and I remember having multiple conversations with community members and staff saying, at least it's quantified. At least we know the challenge that's ahead of us. And we thought, they've adopted an 18-month budget. There'll be a little bit of adjustment as we go into May or into June, but hopefully we're there. Well, that didn't last very, very long. We have continued to face, I think, ambiguity as we roll into the next fiscal year. It continues to be the same. We just don't know the answers to many of the questions. It makes it difficult to quantify a budget when we're not sure what the numbers will be coming out of the state. So the best chance we have is to go off of the numbers that the governor has proposed. The target has continued to move. So just when we get lined up, just when we get on path to solve a problem, then the target moves. The problem becomes either compounded or shifts, makes it very difficult to continue to hit that target. As we sit here this evening presenting this to you, I think the best case scenario we face is the budget that we're presenting tonight. It's the information that's come out of the state over the last couple of weeks. As I look into the future, it's hard to imagine that it would get much better than what it is today, but I know I have said that to you here publicly before, and I have been proved wrong. So the challenge that's before us, and I'll explain this in a little bit, is that moving into 2009-10, we have a shortfall or a hole in our budget of approximately $2.4 million. That's after you take, I'm sorry, 4.2. That's after you take all of the federal stimulus money, all of the cuts that the state may revise is, putting that all together, we plug that into our budget, and when you shake it all together, what falls out at the bottom is a $4.2 million hole. I'll explain a little bit more about that. It's possible that that could improve. One of the challenges that we face, in addition to just a shortfall in the budget and the ambiguity, is that CUSD, along with many other school districts in the state, is because of these cuts have been so dramatic, is we're right at our margin. We're right at our 2% required reserve, which is about $8 million. We have no room for a hiccup. Every time we have a hiccup, we have to cut something. We're not alone in that. So I wanted to just kind of point these out, that these are some signs of the times that most school districts, local agencies, authorities, counties, cities as well, are having to wrestle with and go through this year. I'm not going to go through this point by point on this timeline. It was just simply to give you an idea of what we've had to navigate through. This is only a fraction of the conversations we've had, a fraction of the information that we've presented that has changed in the middle of the process. But I would draw your attention to the May 27th, May revision. This is unprecedented. Here we are in June, and we're having our second round of mid-year cuts. How do you have a mid-year cut at the end of the year and find a place to take it out of your budget? You've already spent the money. Not only do we have mid-year cuts too, we have our first cut for the 9-10 budget before we even get to the school year. For the first time in history, we've adopted our budget months ahead of time. They're already cutting that budget before we roll into it. And so we have a revision to the 10-11 and cuts for 10, or I'm sorry, revision for 9-10 and cuts for 9-10 as well. So we can't even get going in the year without having to be faced with dealing with revising what we are putting together. So the next meeting is the 22nd of June. That's when we'll be presenting to you the whole SACS budget, the actual printout of what we'll be asking you to approve. What I tried to do in the next couple of slides is just take that large big budget number, that $400 million, and try to bring it down into what are the impacts of the cuts, what are the benefits of the federal stimulus money, and put it all together. So as we sit here tonight, what we're looking at in terms of the governor's May revision is a cut to our 08-09, that is our current fiscal year, a reduction in revenue limit of $219 per student. For 9-10, that's an additional cut of $267 at best per student. This is what we plugged into the budget. So when you multiply that times our number of students, you're looking at a shortfall or an additional revenue reduction of $11 million this year and $13.4 million next year. And I'll point out that that $13.4 has no correlation to the state fiscal stabilization money from the federal government, which approximates $13.4. It's just coincidental. So when you combine the revenue limit reduction from the budget that's been adopted for this year that we're sitting on today, moving forward, it's a reduction of approximately $500 less per student. That is significant. That's in addition to the cut from last year. So the combined total reduction there is about $24.4 million. And then that little note block there, this is a 17.9, almost 18% reduction in revenue from what we're statutorily due from the state, what the state owes us per statute. That's a significant cut in revenue. That is why this has been so difficult. That is why we've been wrestling with these big, large cuts. Okay, federal stimulus money. This has been a rather hot topic over the last several months. We've been looking forward to getting these numbers quantified, getting the information put together, getting the rules, the regulations, the reporting requirements all in order so that we can understand how to piece those together, how we can make best use of those funds. As I sit here tonight, I have to tell you, we still don't know. And I know, Mr. Brick, you've asked on multiple occasions, how much are we getting and when is it coming? And, well, at least I can say the check has arrived for the first wave of that. That's in the bank, the $13.4 million. But what we don't have is it completely figured out what the reporting requirements are and what all the regulations are that attach to that. We can't just simply sweep it into the general fund and use it as unrestricted revenue. We have to report and account for how we've used it. So there's an assumption that goes with this slide, and that assumption is that we have made an assumption that every dime of the federal stimulus money that could possibly be moved into the general fund and used in an unrestricted fashion, we have done. So we're looking at the best case scenario of capturing federal stimulus money. And there's, as we've talked before, there's three primary areas that we're receiving money. One is Title I. That money flows directly to the schools. That's why it's not shown or counted in what we can move into the general fund. The IDEA is the special education money. And of that, there's approximately $5 million that could be used in an unrestricted fashion. But we're not, like I said, we're not exactly sure how the regulations will have that drop out. What we've done is we've assumed that in terms of its best case scenario. And then the state fiscal stabilization funds was the unrestricted portion, for lack of a better term, of the federal money that came to us. And that's that $13.4 million. We've assumed we'll be able to capture all of that. And then there's some backfilling of the categorical cuts that we experienced that we're waiting for. I believe CDE has calculated that number for us. That money hasn't arrived. We don't know when it will be getting here, but we've assumed that that's showing up as well. That's acceptable with the Department, Orange County Department of Education, to count that. So as you look at those 2 years, for this current fiscal year, we're accounting for about $11.4 million, which is going to show you is going to offset the cut. And then the 9-10 money, about 10.9. You put those together, and what we have is we just about squeak through on the cuts this year, which is a good thing that we finished this year 09 okay. 09, I'm sorry, 08-09 okay. And then for 9-10, they don't offset. There's still a shortfall. Now, this slide is in here for just discussion purpose. It's just illustrative. There's no correlation between the expenditures and the revenues. It's simply to indicate and show that over time, we have costs and expenditures that increase over time, and to show that we have revenues that are decreasing. And I've put question marks in there for the revenue limit under the revenue flexibility, because we don't know what the state is going to do with the revenue limit, whether it's going to maintain flat, which probably would seem like a very optimistic projection at this point, or whether it's going to increase or whether it's going to decrease. So there's the uncertainty with the revenue limit. That's the funding per student. We have the categorical flexibility and the class size reduction flexibility. As you can see, those roll off. And at the point those roll off in future years, remember the categorical flexibility was allowed for 5 years, and the CSR flexibility, that's our ability to take that, move the class sizes up, and take the penalty as well as take a savings out. I just wanted to show that as we look into future years, we have increasing costs and decreasing revenues that we're going to have to wrestle with. So while we can solve the budget for 08-09, I'm confident we can solve it for 09-10. We have a monumental task ahead of us as we move into 10-11 and beyond. And here's what we have as we look forward over the next couple of years in our projection for our multi-year, and I'll explain this. So for 08-09, what we're projecting is that when we close our books, that we'll end up somewhere about $500,000 over and above our required 2% reserve. I kind of refer to this as budget dust. Really, when you're looking at a $400 million to $500 million budget, that's almost a rounding error. That is extremely close to what our required minimum reserve is. And when you look at next year on paper, and this is just paper, and this is under the best case scenario, there'd be a $170,000 surplus over and above the 2% required reserve. But now what I need to do is explain something. In the budget that we'll be presenting to you next week and asking you to adopt, it will reflect that number in that first line for 9-10. But the reality is that the information and the cuts that were pushed down from the state came so late in the game that a lot of districts are ahead of us in terms of budget adoption, and they've already been working on this and incorporating these numbers. And the Department of Education said, we do not want you to recognize an $80 per ADA cut in 9-10 that's coming your way. It hasn't been formally quantified. We're not sure when that will get pushed through, but that is a very distinct possibility. If that comes through, in which we're planning on it, and what OCDE has asked us to do is then address that before first interim next fall, to have those cuts identified and plugged into the budget for our first budget revision, is that we have a $4.2 million hole in the budget for next year that we have to address between now and first interim. However, if you take a look at under best case scenario, if the second round of federal stimulus money, the state applies for it and we get it and it isn't skimmed off the top and the UC system doesn't pick some of that out, there's a possibility, and I'll say it as a possibility because we don't know, there could be somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 to $5 million. But we're not being allowed to recognize that yet because it hasn't been quantified or determined if it's coming. This is where this ambiguity comes into play, is that we have to adopt a budget with uncertain as to what cut or revenue is going to be placed on us. So what we know we can do and what we will be doing is presenting you the budget on the white line for 9-10, showing balanced, but knowing that as soon as we get into the budget year, we're going to be right back here before you working on about $4.2 million in cuts before first interim, unless somehow this federal money is quantified and identified and pushed through. That may not even come until after in the fall, or we don't know. The state has to apply for that money yet. So this is kind of in the, you know, an effort to fully disclose the challenges ahead of us, what we're up against. Any questions on this slide? Because this is kind of pivotal. Okay, now here's where the real challenge starts. Is the real challenge starts, not that $4.2 million isn't a challenge, believe me, in 10-11. And the reason that number jumps so high is because all of the one-time money has dropped out of the budget at that point. So in 10-11, we need to make an additional or identify $26 million in ongoing cuts beginning in 10-11. Where we find that or where we identify that from, I do not know, sitting here in front of you. At some point, we have to reduce overall costs of operating. And then in 11-12, another $27 million. So it isn't just CUSD. This is what every school district in the state is facing in terms of a percentage of their budget. And they're all, this week, the comment we made when I sat down with my budget group, and I said, you know, the rest of the 1,000 school districts in the state, they're having the same conversation. They're scratching their head trying to figure out where this will come from because they just don't know. So what are our recommendations as we move forward into budget adoption? To continue and review the tighten the budget, which is what we've been doing and what we will continue to do. That's an ongoing process. To scrutinize purchase orders, to scrutinize expenditures, to work with the various departments and staff to make sure we're doing the best we can to keep it as efficient as possible. We need to continue to work on, finalize, and implement the reorganization that has been started. We've had some conversations regarding that, some of the $25 million cuts that we're making. made in April were reflective of some of those changes. We're in the process of trying to bring that forward, looking forward to the new Dr. Mahler, our new interim superintendent, coming on board to work with her, as well as Naomi, in this process to get that wrapped up. We need to continue to move forward and complete negotiations that would quantify the labor piece. We need to tighten staffing. And I need to make a comment here, is that one of the cuts that we had included in the $25 million was to increase staffing in grades 4 through 12 by 0.5. And we were not able to do that because that is a negotiable item. So we had to roll that back into the budget. We will be staffing off of the staffing formulas that are in the approved agreement, or bargaining union agreement, and we'll be staffing off of enrollment. We'll keep our word. We'll staff off enrollment as we said we would do, as opposed to ADA. But what we will do in response to that is we are going to tighten staffing, take a look at classes, class size across the district to make sure that we're not being lenient or robust in providing staffing over and above what's called for. So that'll be tough and that'll be tight. As we move forward, we need to plan and prepare for the $4.2 million. That's right up in July as we get rolling into the new fiscal year. As I sit here tonight, I would predict that we're probably going to have some sort of adjustment mid-year again, unless revenue flow at the state, property tax increases, things happen, and the state's able to get some more money. I would anticipate that we're probably looking at more mid-year cuts next year. I certainly hope we don't have a budget presentation every month like we've done this year, but I don't know. And then we need to prepare, because as we move into 2010-11, we need to have that $26 million in cuts identified by 10-11 before budget is adopted. So we'll be working on that throughout the year and into next spring. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Christopher. He's going to review the other two handouts that you have in front of you, which are basically a very, very short summary of the budget as well as our assumptions. And I'll click through these as you're ready to go.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. The first handout that you'll have has two tables on it. The first one on that form is the assumptions that we've used for the 2008-2009 estimated actuals. It will be part of the fiscal year end closing documents that you'll see at the next board meeting on the 22nd. Some of the key factors that are on that table, which is the first one on that sheet, we had a prior year base limit beginning for the 2008-2009 fiscal year. We had a funded amount of $5,783 per ADA. The state had indicated that we would have an additional COLA amount on top of that, which would have brought us to a funded amount per ADA that we're statutorily entitled to of $6,112. Unfortunately, during the course of the year, the state deficited that amount to the tune of about 11.4%, which gave us an actual funded revenue limit during the fiscal year of about $5,400 per ADA. So if you take that number and multiply it against what our ADA number is for the year, you get a funding deficit for the fiscal year of $18.5 million. So that is the number that we had to use to close out the fiscal year and to reconcile with, which also then feeds into the assumptions that we used for the 2009-2010 tentative budget, which gives us, a prior year base revenue limit, which we are statutorily entitled to, of about $6,100, which we add on to that the COLA amount that the state had, again, in their multi-year, had allocated towards us to about $6,373 per ADA. But again, that number has been further deficited from 2008-2009 to just shy of 18%. So if we take that new 5228 number per ADA and multiply it times what our enrollment is projected to be for the 2009-10 year, we have a funding differential, again, of $25.8 million, which we are short. So we've used those assumptions to then build the tentative budget for 2009-10, which is, there you go. And that is on the second set of handouts that you have. Some of the key adjustments that we've had to make from 2008-2009 to 2009-2010, in the revenue area, we had reductions in revenue limit and state other revenue of about 13.5 $1.9 million. However, part of that shortfall can be offset with some of the one-time federal funding, which we project for the 2009-10 year of about $10.9 million. From the expenditure side, these would be reductions that would have been identified during the April cut list that was approved by the trustees. We reduced salaries and benefits by $19.1 million, which moves through all the employee groups, certificated, classified, and Teamsters. And on top of that, we've also reduced services, which would be consultants and other contractual agreements that the district has, by $1.6 million. And finally, under expenditures, we've reduced some items in the debt service column by $2 million, which the main function of that would have been the standard payoff and of some post-employment benefits, early retirement, things like that. And so all of that shakes out. In addition to that, we also have transfers that we were able to capture in deferred maintenance. That's about $2 million that we're able to move over. And also, in addition to some of the other cuts that were made in April, we have cuts that were made to Fund 11 and Fund 14. Fund 11 is the adult ed, and Fund 14 is deferred maintenance. We were able to capture about $2.1 million from those two areas. So when all that shakes out, we're able to have an ending balance that we're projecting to be about $7.6 million, which is almost exactly on the minimum requirement that we have to have of 2%. It's actually at about 2.05%, which, again, to go back to Ron's earlier slide, that leaves us with minimal margin that we have for any sort of hiccups in the budget. So with that, we're happy to entertain any discussion.
Trustee Bryson?
Yes, I'd like to address some historic issues as we look at this that are coming into play now that you're dealing with. Number one, having just come back from a state treasurer's convention seminar, instructive seminar, I will tell you that we did not hear anything there that would cause you to be excited or happy. What we heard there was very grave, very solemn, and we were briefed by a lot of different people, from the Federal Reserve Bank officers to other state officials and experts on finance, and not one of them presented us with a picture that was anything but grave, stark, and difficult. This means that, as we have discussed before, the waters that we are in now, and we prepared before we entered them, and Ron and Chris have been wonderful to work with on this, and we will continue to work. But the underlying problems are many in the state, and we are dealing with some things here which have made it even more difficult in some ways for us to handle. Historically, before Larry and Ellen and I were on this board, there were some problems of slight increases in classroom sizes, which were noticed by quite a few people, actually, in the community, parents, concerned parents. And that was of concern then, and it was a reality. There was a slowly incremental increase in certain class sizes from 4 through 12. And people have asked all of us many times recently, and we have great concern, and we hear your concerns about keeping the smaller class sizes. But I want you all to understand something. We are not starting from the same position that other districts around us are starting from. We are starting from a position of having advanced somewhat into a hole, both with that issue and with budgetary issues 5 years prior to our first three of us being elected. Those 5 years in the red and the slight expansion in the classrooms, which were noticeable to quite a few, created a problem for us from the beginning, which we have tried to face on your behalf for the sake of your children and the children for whom we donate our lives here. We have tried to deal with that every single day to make sure that this district will continue and will continue to educate the children, which is the only reason that any of us are here. And in the desire to make sure the children are educated, we have repeatedly asked Ron, and he has been a champion, to look at every way humanly possible for us to reserve that smaller class size that each and every one of you who is here tonight wants to keep so badly. But as much as you want to keep it, we want to keep it even more than you do. Okay? The thing that will be very difficult to confront, ladies and gentlemen, and I say this with the reality of working for the treasurer, who reviewed with his own time this budget today also, and said that we were right on track, we had done what we had to do. And in the gravity of this time, do not think for a minute that we will not do everything we can to hold the line, but we can't give you any guarantees, ladies and gentlemen, because we're not through with what's coming. We see it in these treasurer's conferences. We see what's coming, and there is no certainty here. If the legislature will do its job as we have attempted to do our job, then we may get through some of this or be able to re-implement some of it. But if there is no attempt on the state level to control outrageous spending when there is no money to pay for it, then we can't do anything but deal with the horrifying realities that none of us have enjoyed, nor will we enjoy dealing with. But we did not start from the level ground of Saddleback or Orange or Tustin. I have looked at some of the numbers in the other districts. I have talked to people, and when we were slowly rising before we ever came here, when we were in the red, they were not. And actually, though, from what I heard in LA County and other places, I think that everyone's going to be biting some bullets they do not like one bit, because we are just barely into the big part of the storm now. And there is definitely more to come. So I just want you to know from me and from the people I work with here as trustees that their hearts are there. My heart is there. We're there for you on that, and we will fight every inch of the way to do what we can do. But we can only do what we can do to make sure that we stabilize as a district. Because if we fall below 2%, ladies and gentlemen, and it continues on this track, this district would be taken over. Okay? It would be taken over because we have to have a stable budget. And it would be a great tragedy to have that happen to this district.
Order, please. Mr. Christensen, we do have some blue cards. Did you wish to speak before the blue cards?
No, I'll wait.
Thank you. We do have numerous blue cards. We have 1 minute each, please. And we start with Lori Donchek from San Clemente, Kim Price, followed by Julie Collier. Please refrain. Thank you. But we understand.
Okay. Madam President, don't start the clock yet. First of all, I'm the mayor of San Clemente, and I have a prepared statement. We thought we had 3 minutes. It's a joint council statement. At your pleasure, I can either streamline it and make the 1 minute, or I could read the 2.5 minutes.
Is it from the city of San Clemente?
It is crafted by me as the liaison to the CUSD, but it has been approved and revised by my fellow council members, so it is as a joint council statement.
You can read it then, please.
Okay, and I'll read it quickly. Thank you. I appreciate that because this is important to us. And also thank you for everything that you do for our city. It is deeply recognized that you work hard. Okay. The City Council of San Clemente respectfully encourages thoughtful consideration to the issue of eliminating the CUSD class size reduction CSR program. As you know, this program was put into law in 1996 and has been linked with measured improvements in K-3 students where class sizes are kept to 20 students or less. Discussions about money are often emotional, especially when there isn't enough money for all the work that needs to be done. San Clemente is definitely not questioning your decision-making at all. Instead, we feel a very strong obligation to represent the concerns of our community, especially in the matter of class size reduction. Changes are needed in these difficult economic times. However, we as a city council believe that increasing the class size for young children should be one of the very last areas to change for remedy. A review of national literature suggests that, first of all, student achievement correlates positively with the individualized attention and flexibility afforded by a 20 or less classroom size. Minority students especially benefit. Teacher morale improves, teaching methods improve, classroom environment improves, parent satisfaction improves. Potentially gaining control of funds might be desirable at the local level, but the risk that those funds might be redirected outside the classroom is a risk not worth taking. We are told that of 121 school districts in OCLA and San Diego County, our district is the only one heading in the direction of eliminating CSR. I mentioned up here as an advocate for San Clemente families. We've heard voices from El Lobo, Vista Del Mar, Concordia, and so on. I can give you a sampling of that, of their concerns, but I guess I'd want to conclude with these comments. It's often easy to frame the conversation in business terms. Many of us are business professionals by training, using acronyms like CRS or referring to administrative targets or talking about optimum use of school facilities. The real bottom line is that a five-year-old child only gets one chance at kindergarten, and the same for first grade or second grade. Learning is cumulative, and that five-year-old deserves the best we can give him or her. As you deliberate tonight on undeniably tough budget issues, please consider the possibility of keeping CSR alive in the district. In many ways, we're asking for a stay of execution for an innocent victim. Specifically, defer changes in CSR until the next budget cycle at least. Let San Clemente families and others in the CUSD know that the elementary school classroom environment for their children next year will not be compromised. Thank you for the time.
Kim Price, followed by Julie Collier and Chris Bowen.
Good evening. When I voted for all of you during the recall elections, I believed in you. I was looking for a change of the guard, and with each of you, I saw the promise that you would do what the community asked for. Haven't you heard our cries yet? Many of us have come before you to speak in support of class size reduction here at the board meetings. I know that you have received hundreds, if not thousands, of emails in support of CSR, and I've personally delivered letters from parents at our school, Riley Elementary in Mission Viejo. I can't understand why there can't be some sort of compromise here. To increase a class of first graders from 20 students to 31 is a 50% increase. I find this completely absurd. Many of us have pleaded with you to see a budget that should increase class size students to 25. This is a 25% increase, not ideal, but better than 31. If you can't save CSR at all, can you allow us to transfer our children into another district? Please.
Thank you. Julie Collier, followed by Chris Bowen and Melanie Christensen.
You must find a way to fund CSR. If not, you're letting down the future of this district and the future of our children. Larger class sizes will cost more money. There will be a growing number of children needing extra resources just to meet grade level. Test scores will plummet, dropout rates will increase, elementary teachers will not be able to teach at the expected levels. Junior high and high school teachers will waste precious higher learning time to find it necessary to review core elements that were missed in crowded elementary school.
Please do not rely on moms to volunteer in the classrooms to pick up the slack. Due to the economy, many of us have had to go back to work and will not be available next year. This is the unfortunate reality of a future without CSR. Other districts get this. Why don't you? Block music and classified workers are equally important and should not bear the brunt of keeping CSR. Use the stimulus money. Dig deeper. Find a way. Parents understand that this district has very difficult choices to make. We are asking you not to let down the youngest students of CUSD.
Thank you. Chris Bowen, followed by Melanie Christensen and Sandy Zimmer.
Due to the ambiguity that Ron Loves discussed tonight, I am asking you to adopt a stay-put budget for 1 year until we have better financial answers for the decisions we are making, and we hire a permanent superintendent who has leadership skills and vision to establish the right course of action for our children. LA Unified has successfully adopted this approach when crucial decisions were on the table and all the whole picture was not complete. We have identified five other sources of money that CUSD could use to adopt a stay-put and will not affect long-term programs like CSR and Block Music. The $5 million in reimbursement from IDEA that Ron Leves discussed. Up to $2.2 million in CUMA. $7 million is available by furloughing all CUSD employees for 5 days. Over $2 million is available for closing the administration building for 2 weeks over the summer. These numbers add up to over $16 million before you even look at SFSF monies. To secure CSR at 24-1, it only costs $4.9 million. Block Music is only $1 million. Okay. You have the resources to fund these programs. It will take thinking creatively, but you owe it to the children of the district to fight for them. If you cut these essential long-term programs, you would leave our children and teachers with little more than four walls and a desk. You can do better than that.
Thank you. Melanie Christensen, followed by Sandy Zimmer and Vern Grease.
Good evening. Between May 15th and June 5th, concerned parents contacted 121 school districts in L.A., San Diego, and Orange counties. The disappointing news at that time was that CAPA was the only district planning to eliminate CSR. After the special election, we contacted all 24 OC elementary districts again, and not much had changed. A few bumped up their ratios. One small district did vote to eliminate CSR. Orange Unified and Santa Ana are still finalizing plans for 24-1, but sadly, we are still eliminating it. In contacting the districts and compiling the data, we found a strong commitment to CSR among the other districts and much creativity in administering it. Westminster, Laguna, Newport Mesa are among others staying at 20-1. Saddleback is moving to 24-1. Yorba Linda and others are increasing the ratios as the kids move up from first through third grade. Centralia is one of the many using option two. We don't have to be mediocre. We can find creative ways to pay for programs that are near and dear to parents' hearts. That's what we're asking you to do. Look at the data we collected, look at the other district's creative solutions, and find one that might work for us, and then use the flexibility provided to the state to put it to work for CAPO Unified.
Thank you. Sandy Zimmer, followed by Vern Grease and Michael Villar.
Hi there. I'm Sandy Zimmer. I'm representing Elisa Miguel High School. Our color guard and band, marching band this year, we won state. It's the first time in 10 years. That's the quality of the music program that we have been given in this district. We have been blessed. If we did not have Block Music to start these kids out, we would not have the quality of musicians that we have today. We have received so many awards at so many of our high schools, and our students excel not only academically, but they excel in a love and appreciation of the arts. And we cannot have that if we eliminate the Block Music program. We will not have that. The other thing I want to implore is there is one teacher who has made a dramatic impact. His name is Michael Corrigan. We need teachers like that in our district. We need to work with our union to be able to have teachers with credentials, not tenure.
Thank you. Vern Grease, followed by Michael Villar and Julie Muller. Mr. Grease.
Hi. I'm a fifth grade teacher in at Vista Del Mar Elementary School and a parent of an incoming kindergartner to Castile. I'm here to express my extreme frustration with the level of selfishness that seems to prevail within our district. Selfishness is defined as showing that personal needs and wishes are more important than those of other people. I am frustrated with the selfishness of the teachers' union, who seems to have completely written off the nearly 400 RIF teachers with the more important goal of addressing personal days, 4-5 proposal for upper grade teachers, and maintaining the pay scale for its more valued senior members. Isn't the union supposed to represent all teachers, including those RIFed? I am frustrated that teachers complain and are pitted against each other about the prospect of a pay cut to save smaller classes and jobs. Why should all new teachers receive 100% pay cut while others sacrifice nothing? In difficult times, shouldn't everyone make sacrifices, not just some? I know many teachers that are willing to accept a reduction in salary for the sake of their RIFed colleagues and, more important, education as a whole, and I'm frustrated that their unselfish viewpoint is never heard. Mostly, however, I am frustrated with this board that seems to look upon its wonderful teachers and staff with disdain and disgust, who unprofessionally roll their eyes during board meetings when they hear from its members, who attend district bashing movies like The Myth of the Middle Class Schools, while failing to attend Teacher of the Year ceremonies and other important district events. Some might say I am selfishly fighting for a job. I disagree. As a teacher, I know the importance of one-on-one attention and differentiated instruction.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm not there.
I know. Michael Villar, followed by Julie Muller and Stacey Strong.
Good evening. I'm wondering if anybody here knows what a germinal disc is. Probably not. But my six-year-old kindergartner knows what it is because her teacher, Mrs. Karen Premack at Palisades Elementary School, taught it to her. And I was flabbergasted to find out that Mrs. Premack was given her pink slip for next year. What I'm trying to implore the board is that we've got great teachers, a lot like Mrs. Premack, who are out there that are getting pink slips, and we've got teachers who are being retained just based on tenure alone. I'm imploring the board that you please figure out a way to fully evaluate your teachers so that the best teachers remain behind. We understand the budget. I'm a realist and understand that cuts have to be made and you have an extremely difficult job to do that. But what I want to see remain behind for my kids and for all the kids here at Capital Unified is the best, most qualified teachers stay behind. If you need any help, leadership, I will personally volunteer my time and leadership skills to lead a committee to help you fully evaluate the teachers for next year. Thank you.
Thank you. Julie Muller, followed by Stacey Strong and Tawny Mai.
How is it that all the surrounding school districts are retaining CSR in some capacity and our school board has it on the chopping block time and again? There is a reason why the other school districts keep CSR as a priority program. Studies show that children who are in smaller class sizes in younger grades have higher graduation rates and have a better chance of going to graduate from college. How can we feel good about balancing the budget on the backs of the youngest children in the district? How about balancing the budget by starting at the administrative level and then going down to the schools? Maybe if you took as much time looking at how to save at the administrative level, we might get somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Stacey Strong, followed by Tawny Mai and Terry House.
I'm here to ask you to maintain CSR despite the terrible budget cuts. You have inherited a difficult situation in a very difficult time, and we understand that. Please consider that without CSR, you will not only be increasing the number of students in each classroom, you will also be significantly reducing the number of adults on every elementary campus. At our school, for instance, I have a daughter at Ladera Ranch Elementary. We currently have 36 teachers and 860 students. Under the proposed cuts, we will have only 28 teachers and 900 students. This is at a time when we lose office staff and teacher aides as well. What are the implications of this in a campus-wide emergency, not to mention the 7-year-old who needs counseling after being bullied on the playground? Please also consider that the CSR flexibility from the state has created a temporary windfall for the district that allows this increase of class sizes by 60%. Part of the reason we are in this bad financial situation today is a lack of planning at the district, as you have pointed out. Please look to 3 years from now when that flexibility money disappears. How will you fill that gap? Increase the class sizes even further or reinstate CSR? And where will our wonderful teachers be at that time? Thank you.
Tawny Mai, followed by Kathy Witrowski and Terry House.
Good evening. I'm a parent at the Wagon Wheel Elementary School, and I'm here to hope that the CSR will keep be alive. We all stress the importance of great education, and we all know great education starts with a solid foundation in early age. I think we all understand that if we increase the class size in elementary area where learning is most critical, what will happen to the excitement for a child when they first start to learn? They won't be able to continue on and be successful. In the time of crisis, we have to a choice to accept the situation and do nothing or be creative and do something. We can't blame the state and legislature for that budget. We can be creative in our spending. I mean, look at Saddleback District. They're able to maintain small class size. Laguna Beach and Newport Mesa District, a basic aid district or local funding model where the local property tax revenue can be used toward school funding. Irvine Unified also turns into this model of funding. Why can't Capital District change to the basic aid district? Board members, I'm pleading with you today. A teacher saved today is the seed for many success stories to come.
Thank you. Kathy Matreski, followed by Terry House and Jennifer McCatter.
My name is Kathy Matreski, and I am among the parents who contacted every school district in San Diego, Orange, and Los Angeles counties to compile data regarding their plans for CSR. Administrators and personnel in many of these districts spoke about CSR's value, importance, and priority to their district and how they are striving and intending to preserve it. All the districts in San Diego, Orange, and LA counties are making CSR a priority and are planning to keep CSR, if not entirely, in some form. Unfortunately, CUSD is the only district that does not share this viewpoint. Our district stands alone in its resolve to eliminate CSR from the very beginning. Why is that? All of you ran and were elected on a reform and change platform. Reducing class sizes and making class sizes more manageable were priorities several of you stated during your campaign for the trustee position you now hold. Every district is facing dire economic conditions. Why are we the only one unwilling to preserve the highest quality of education for our youngest learners? CSR needs to be reserved in some capacity. If you don't change it now, who will clean up the mess that you are going to create?
Terry House, followed by Jennifer McCatter and John and Rosemary Melissa.
Reinstatement, isn't that a wonderful thought? Unfortunately, classified employees are always the last, if ever, to be reinstated. Kathy, food service lead 2, after 10 years, is waiting to see if a typo will be corrected in time to save her job. Jose Luis Sanchez, 22 years of service, wondering after bumping down to his previous position, will still be able to support his family. Ted Carrier, trying to save his position rather than district, contract out his work to LTEC. As you look at the budget tonight, know that we all affect children and the classroom. Reinstatement should be equitable across the board in all departments. And then, who will do the work?
Jennifer McCatter, followed by John, Rosemary, Melissa.
It's Jennifer McAteer, and I'm an Irvine Unified School teacher, and I was a PowerU administrator, so I know what it goes to, what you're going through. I'm also a parent, and I'm a product of this district. I'm very troubled over the decision that this board has been making since joining this district. First, the issues concerning the departure of our superintendent and the loss of other important district administrators has resulted in a void in our district leadership. Second, the cutting of CSR, which you know is a vital program for teaching early literacy skills. It is easy to blame your decisions on the current budget crisis. However, all California districts are dealing with the same crisis. I read in the Orange County Register that $40,000 in campaign contributions came from an organization where their platform advocates vouchers and private schools. Isn't that a conflict of interest? If you call on a public school board member, are you putting students first? What are your intentions being on a public school board? Some of you said you ran so parents would have a voice. Where is our voice? How are we being represented? How are we being heard?
Thank you. John and Rosemary Melissa, followed by Dr. Ron Lackey and Kaylani Conroy.
Hi, my name is John Melissa, and I have a student in the music program at Lisa Miguel High School. Sorry, I had to run out to my car to get my notes. I'm hoping you keep the elementary music program, the block music program, in place. I think you all know there's a high correlation between elementary music and music of all types and academic performance. It provides a contract break that's required by the union, so even if you get rid of it, it's not necessarily going to save any money. Many of the teachers have received termination notices. At Lisa Nagel, we've already lost one of our fine directors because they had to find jobs elsewhere. We're hoping to keep what we have left. If you eliminate the block music program, it'll destroy music at all school levels because of the way the teachers have to be eliminated. Thank you.
Dr. Ron Lackey, followed by Ms. Kehlani Conroy. Ms. Conroy.
Thank you for letting me speak tonight. I stand before you tonight to plead with you to rethink laying off our high school academic interventional counselors or the 1802-funded certified counselors and the APs. It's extremely important that you revisit these counselors and APs that are being let go at the middle school and high school level. I think it's an appropriate request and one that would honor the young sophomore that we lost at St. Clemente High School recently. It was such a tragedy, and I don't know who will be there to pick up the pieces for students, parents, teachers that are affected by these tragedies. These guys conduct grief groups for students whose parents are in Iraq. They help the kids with social and emotional problems. They're invaluable. Just please hear my plea, revisit the issue, and support the kids and the parents and help us get through these kind of hard times. Thank you.
Courtney Felder, followed by Kathy Cross and Deanna Burkhart.
Hello. I'm here to speak on behalf of the class size reduction. I have a daughter and a son at Bergeson Elementary School. My son is going to be a fifth grader next year, and my daughter will be entering the first grade. And I'm very sad to say that she will not have the same benefits that my son had just two years ago. She will be going into a large class size when it is so crucial for her academic development. Class size reduction, even if we could get to 25-1, people in the district would be so happy with 25-1 at this point. It gives teachers so much more time to focus with the students. A larger class size at this young age is more difficult to control. And students that are at risk may slip through the cracks. It'll definitely also help with our achievement gap, a smaller class size. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy Cross, followed by Deanna Burkhart.
Good evening. You know, we've talked about numbers, and very neutral in terms of how it affects people. Numbers, there's not a lot of emotion, but you see how upset we are. I'm a parent of two children at Lobo Elementary School, and I'm going to tell you one little small story about the collateral effects that this decision to eliminate class size reduction when we want to keep it. We have a collaborative kindergarten program at Lobo School. It's the only one of its kind in this district, taught by a special education teacher, Mrs. Richardson, and a wonderful general education teacher named Mrs. Carey. And we're getting ready to lose Mrs. Carey because she got her RIF notice. You can't just put two teachers together and say, okay, teach the special education children and the regular education children together. It's not able to be done. Teachers have to work together. Those are two most awesome teachers, and we're getting ready to lose one of them. And that hasn't been thought of, and we respectfully request before you guys, just across the board with a broad brush, as the only district saying, okay, we're going to get rid of class size reduction. That's a mistake. Because what's going to happen to this collaborative program next year? Are we losing that too? Think about this.
Deanna Burkhart.
Madam President, trustees, you may recognize me from the lovely little Crown Valley ruckus a few months ago. I came before you and I asked you to help save our school along with many of the rest of our residents, and we were very grateful for the response that we received. I don't envy you the choices that you have to make regarding these budgets or the ones in future years. A lot of people have let us down to get to this point.
The list is very long and probably ends, to be perfectly frank with ourselves, with our complacency in previous years regarding what was going on. But I urge you to not throw out the babies with the increasingly muddy bath water. It may be that it is truly impossible to save K through 3 CSR at this point, at least for a few years. And if that's true, consider K through 2, K through 1, the kindergartners. I'm not worried about my incoming third grader. One way or another, I know my husband and I will make sure he's okay, but there are a lot of incoming students who are not going to be so fortunate.
Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Lebs, I want to thank you for the excellent presentation that you've been presenting almost every week with these budget meetings, and I can imagine that your coffee bill at home is pretty extreme, because I don't see how you managed to put in the hours for just this alone. Unfortunately, it looks like it's going to continue for the next several years just like this. One thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, this board has no authority as to what teachers leave or stay or any of that. That's beyond what we're authorized to do. I even have friends who are being riffed. Unfortunately, we have a 2% reserve, as you mentioned, and it's barely 2% reserve. A lot of other school districts has had a higher reserve, and they could work into that and do something. And it's disturbing to see that 2010-2011, we're looking at another $26 million beyond these cuts that have to be done again. That's enough to send a chill up your spine. It would be nice to actually increase our reserves this year so that we can prepare for that, but I know that's just an absolute impossibility. We'll be lucky to stay at that 2% reserve. Probably have two questions for you. The first one is looking at 24-1, 25-1, comments as far as look for areas to dig deeper. Can you give a quick, I know you have before, but a quick Reader's Digest version as to if we could, what would happen if we even attempted some sort of a thing like a 24-1, 25-1, what would happen to the rest of the budget as you see it?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Trustee Christensen. If we were to go to, say, 25-1, we would need to identify approximately another $4 million in cuts in some other area of the budget in order to offset that.
Okay, and what about some of the constituent comments as far as other areas that were brought up this evening? I'm assuming some of those have been looked into. And
there were a couple of specific ones. We're using the IDEA money. We've captured that already. $2.5 million Takuma. I'm not quite sure what they're talking about. Probably I would assume they're talking about additional furlough days to management. Additional furlough days across the board, those would have to be negotiated through all the bargaining units. Close the administration building for a period of time during the summer. We evaluated that and had discussions with the board, I believe. That would require negotiation because it would be reducing people's work year as well. A number of the suggestions that have come up over the last several months have related to things that would need to be negotiated through either one or all three of the bargaining units, as well as discussed with management. The difficulty here is that with a $4.2 million budget hole next year, and if the board were to direct staff to save CSR at some level, we would have to find not only that 4.2 but an offsetting amount in the budget to cover whatever that hole is that would be created by the reinstatement of CSR, whatever level it is. I've looked at this. Christopher's looked at it. We've had staff look at it. We've reviewed this with the board multiple times. We've had the OCDE look at it. I've talked to people outside of the district. The plain and simple truth is that every district is facing this challenge, and they're looking at cuts that are very painful. Some other districts have chosen to do different cuts. Saddleback looked at closing schools, reducing some of their sports programs. I don't have their list in front of me. Others, as well as reducing library services, if I recall. So everyone has chosen sort of a different path through this, equally as painful.
I know there doesn't seem a very good solution either way, although I'm still struggling with the CSRs as to what we can do on that. And I understand that there are several school districts in the state that probably are going to allow their sales to be taken over just through insolvency. Could you explain to us what would happen in the classroom if we fell below the 2%? And the state actually did take over a district?
What would happen in the classroom specifically?
As far as funding and the impact, as opposed to, I mean, listen, if we fell short by trying to solve something, to try to resolve something, and fail below our 2%,
okay,
what would happen to the school district?
All right. Well, depending on how far below that projection we would fall, at the end of the budget adoption process, I have to sign a document along with the superintendent that states whether or not the district can meet its fiscal solvency requirements under AB 1200, which requires 3 years of solvency. If we felt that we probably would not make it, but there's a possibility that we could, let me read this. We would have a qualified certification. That would qualified certification shall be assigned to any school district that, based on current projections, may not meet its financial obligations for the current fiscal year or two subsequent. So, but if one of the problems with that $25 million looming out there is we have to begin to identify cuts for that. If we end up adopting a budget that does not meet, let's just make it, for lack of a better term, does not show black ink for next year, we could very easily slip, if not likely slip, into a negative certification, and that would be assigned to any school district that, based upon its current projections, would be unable to meet its financial obligations. And I have a feeling that the Department of Education would become very concerned with us if we adopted a budget knowing that we weren't going to meet those requirements. That kicks into another level of I guess triggers that would come into play. And the first one is that if we move into a negative situation, we would not be able to borrow money. Because if we're negative, we can't show that we could borrow money and pay back money within in the budget year. That becomes a problem because we need to borrow money in order to meet cash flow on our tax revenue anticipation note. So the lender or the market would not buy our TRAN. And if they don't buy our TRAN, we can't meet cash flow, which means we can't make payroll. So it kicks into play if you adopt a negative budget, or if you adopt a budget that isn't fiscally solvent, a bunch of other triggers that are going to make it even more difficult to get through the year. Then, no matter what we do, if we're adopting either qualified or negative, then we begin to lose control. If you adopt the qualified budget, then OCDE is going to require a recovery plan to come right along with that. They're not going to just let you adopt it. They're going to want a recovery plan. So how you're going to dig out of that hole? They want to see how those cuts would be made. If you're going to adopt a negative certification, then you most likely at that point are giving up control of the district. The Department of Education has to report that to CDE, and then the state would have something to say as to how the district would be run. Exactly what timeline or how that would fall into play, I think, would be dependent on when the board would make cuts or make adjustments. I'm not that familiar with it, but could dig deeper into it for you if you would like. I would encourage the board to adopt a solvent budget and save the pain and suffering and the lack of control that the board would be giving up as you move into that area.
Well, again, thank you for making everything you've mentioned clear. I know you don't own this budget. It's been handed to us, and I appreciate the time that you and your staff are working on a daily basis, putting this together.
Trustee Quinston?
Thank you, everyone who has spoke tonight and shared their opinions. And it is a really terrible time. It's a really tough economy. And the pain is everywhere. We read about it. We hear about it. GM is not in real good shape either, and they're in bankruptcy. And the list goes on and on. Nonetheless, we have a duty to educate our young, and I've been an outspoken supporter of trying to retain some version of CSR, and it's really not gotten any easier over the last couple of months. In fact, it's gotten harder. But there is one, I think, critical difference between today and tomorrow, and that's we have a new leader at the helm of this district in Dr. Mahler. And before we do anything that will be irrevocable for the next school year, I would like to let her dig in her shirt sleeves for a few days and take a look and see if she can make any recommendations for the June 22nd budget vote and see if there is any middle ground here. I know every parent who believes in CSR really wants to keep it status quo. I do. But I hear a lot of support for compromise at 24-25-1. And if I understood what you said earlier, Mr. Lebs, to save CSR at 25-1, we need $4 million in cuts?
Yeah, approximately $4 million in additional cuts, that is, of ongoing cuts.
Okay. I don't have any really good, non-painful ideas, but we're about to vote on item 32 to reinstate $3.5 million a year in administrative employees, and that's one $3.5 million recurring expense item that could bring back CSR. So, it's really not pleasant. It's not, there are no good choices anymore. But I, for one, would like us to keep working until we can't. And I would encourage my board members to defer voting on item 32, to charge Dr. Mahler with working with our staff, and just see if there's something left before we do something irrevocable. I know there's a lot of... really reasonable, smart people can disagree about a lot of things, and this is one of them. And I hear a lot about the great API and test scores in this district at the high schools and the middle schools, and every one of those kids went through CSR. And it's not going to be easy because the pain is probably going to get worse before it gets better. But we're talking about looking on June 22nd at a reorganized administrative chart. Well, let's look at it. Let's compress it. Let's ask everybody to work harder. The bottom line is we're not in the business of employment. We're in the business of education. Focus on that core mission, and we need to focus on teaching our youngest children reading, writing, arithmetic, and all the rest that goes with it. Yeah, music is great too. I know there's some people on this board and in this district who have an easy solution to CSR, and that's eliminate all sports. $5 million line item right there. And I see a lot of heads shaking no. There's a lot of really tough choices, no good choices. I think as much as we want to plan 5 years out, these are extraordinary times. We're on the verge of 1929. We're going 1 year at a time right now is the way I look at it. We'll find out a year from now if our new president and his team are as smart as we hope they are. And at that point, we're going to have a whole cohort of children in K through 3 having missed out on that great year of CSR. So, my request to my colleagues is let's freeze things for 2 weeks for Dr. Maller. Let's charge her with the impossible. We need a miracle. And
this is a non-voting item. This is a discussion item.
Oh, I know, but I'm talking about item 32 that's coming up for $3.5 million. And let's give our children, our constituents, our parents all the consideration they're asking for. They're asking for it in good faith. Yes, we are burdened with the problems of the past on why is our district different than all the other districts in Southern California. I've asked that question a lot, too, and I've really heard a good answer, but the math that we're being given by staff, by the county, it just doesn't add up to an easy answer, and that's how I see it. I say let's keep working, trying to figure it out. Let's reach a compromise for 1 year and then keep working. Thank you.
Trustee Bryson. There are a couple of things that immediately come to my mind. One of them is, Ron, if there were a 10% cut across the board, would we be able to keep CSR from K through 3?
Yes. A specific cut of 10% across the board would yield approximately $30 million in savings.
Okay. The second cautionary note is last week when I was in the Treasurer's Conference, the first trans submitted by LA Unified failed. What this means, I will let Ron explain to you, but it is not a good thing. So while we do have a means of creating $30 million, if everyone shares the pain, and it is not relegated only to the little children, as that one lady said so vividly, let us not throw the babies out with the dirty bathwater. That sticks in my mind. And if we made the cut and everyone shares the pain, then we don't have to do that, and we don't have to do a lot of other things we don't want to do. But that's for another day and another group of people to decide. Then the other point, I certainly agree with Trustee Winston that we have a new leader at the helm, and the point is very well taken, Trustee Winston, that we owe her and our constituents the time that she deserves to take a look at our budget. That's not to say that anything necessarily would change at the end of that time, but it is a point of respect, and we do have other things going on, and maybe we will achieve our 10% cut and be able to do this and many other things that we would like to retain. The block music, the counselors, all of these things weigh on all of us, and none of us is sleeping very well. And if we're able to do that, if everyone is able to pick up their little piece of the load and share the pain instead of only foisting it on certain groups, it would be a marvelous day for this district.
Any further comments?
I take that as marching orders, Dr. Maller.
She's running away now. Item number 30. We move on to item number 30. First reading on revision of board policy 1230 school-connected organizations. Ms. Hatchell.
Good evening, trustees. We bring this board
policy revision to you. We've had some problems in the past with school-connected organizations raising money to support our schools, and of course in this time we'll take all of the money that we can get. However, we do need to have that money funneled in an appropriate direction. Some of the issues that we've seen in the past are funds being run through personal bank accounts, which obviously present some liability issues for us, as well as funds that are being raised to support projects that may not meet DSA approval, and then the district needs to go back and correct some of the errors, and that means more money for us to be spent out of the general fund, as well as money that is being directed toward positions that may not be supported by our personnel job descriptions. So the intent of this policy revision is to create some guidelines for these school-connected organizations that, number one, they do run as legitimate nonprofit organizations or run under the umbrella of a nonprofit organization, and that they also have district liaisons, some of them district liaisons being principals or support administrators at the schools that do connect with them so that all of the projects that they fundraise for are met with the appropriate guidelines.
Comments, Mr. Winston, Trustee Winston.
Thank you, Ms. Hatchell. Are these rules just putting down on paper a process that more or less exists right now, or is there something new about this?
We do not have a clear process for this. This has been one of the problems in the past, so we're trying to make a process that is more clear to the parents that are supporting these organizations, and also so that we're actually aware. In many cases, when we surveyed our high schools, they weren't even aware of some of the fundraising groups and booster clubs that were on their campus. So this allows us to have a knowledge of those organizations.
Okay. I know there's a group at one of our high schools is trying to get organized to help fund some of the sports programs, and I'm not sure the status, and I've sent some emails around, I'm not sure what the status of that particular situation is, but...
Please remain quiet as the meeting is continuing as you exit. Thank you. Sorry.
And I don't see anything in here that is particularly with a lot of common sense attached to it. But one thing I don't want to see is having the district liaison who's in charge of a school site or in charge of a group exercise undue sort of influence or gatekeeping power over that group or what they're allowed to do with their money. And I don't see anything in here that addresses that issue. Could that be addressed or fleshed out? I'm not even sure what the answer, what suggestion I would make, but I would like to see something like that so that at the end of the day, if a group comes together and they have a legal idea and not a nonsensical idea, and they want to get together and put their effort and money behind it for a particular activity, I don't want all that to be misdirected by somebody for some other purpose if they happen to disagree with that activity, if that makes sense. So is there some way you could maybe suggest something? I think Trustee Bryson has something to say about this. Thanks.
I attended in San Diego something called Advanced Cash Handling, which is a one-day certified program from the Federal Reserve Bank. And it is done for participating schools also in that area. And I talked to the treasurer, and he said that we would implement that in the county here to assist all the school districts and their organizations. So anyone of any group who would like to be properly trained in cash handling, meaning that it is tracked, properly handled, and at the end of the day you're certified as a cash handler. And there are very strict rules and regulations actually for handling hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, and the districts that have used it, have implemented this, have found it to be very, very helpful.
That might help us with some of our audit findings actually with the ASB funds and so forth.
And the cash management is certainly important. That wasn't really what I was talking about, though. What I'm talking about more is sort of the approval process, and we're all about local control, letting parents participate, and I just want to make sure that they aren't arbitrarily or for undue reasons prohibited from doing that. And I assume that the policy and the regs came from CSBA or somebody like that. The very last point in the regs, 5.0, I'm not sure in this day and age that makes sense anymore. It says fundraising should not become the primary source of revenue for ongoing programs that should otherwise be supported by the state or federal government. Well, I mean,
this year it's okay.
I think we're looking for ongoing revenue from everybody but the state and federal government, so you might want to reconsider taking that one off. Seriously, anyway, if you have questions about what I mean with what I'm asking for, let me know. Thank you.
I think I understand your sentiment, and we can adjust that for the second reading.
I have a comment or question. I know that we have basically developed almost an underground economy kind of things, people trying to get things done on their local campuses and dress up their schools and a lot of school spirit going on and so forth. And I know we need this policy. We don't want to take away the enthusiasm at the school level either. And so I also am curious about the liaison. And I'm wondering, why will there be a district liaison when we basically have the school principal? Would not that person be, I mean, you go ahead and develop what we have from the district, and then you have specialty items at the school, whatever, that I'm sure the PTA and those groups go ahead and meet with the principal, and that he would be able to direct and coordinate how that would be done. And as long as the processes are followed, that they have their 501c3, da-da-da-da, why would we need an additional liaison at the district level, which does kind of get into the gatekeeper issue that Trustee Winston was talking about?
The district liaison could be the principal, or it could be an activities director or administrator that served at the school. So it's just one administrative liaison that can oversee the expenditures and just make sure that they're going through the proper processes that we need.
And who's doing that now?
Right now we don't have
at all
that happening in some cases. And in many cases, we have great relationships with our school-connected organizations. However, there are some where, like I said, projects are done over the weekend, and we come back on Monday, and lo and behold, there is a new project that was built, and we unfortunately need to correct it because it doesn't meet the approvals that we need to follow.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, we'll move on and get back with you with additional comments. Thank you. Item number 31, thankfully that was approved. Item number 32, reinstatement of program services and management personnel.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. No. The item is continued 4-3 to the next meeting. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Item number 33, contract approval and fee agreement, loose forward, attorneys at law. I beg your pardon, I was distracted on that. That was Mr. Maddox, Mr. Lopez Maddox. And seconded by Mr. Winston. Any discussion by the board? We do have some cards here. 1 minute, please. Rhonda Whalen, followed by Terry House. Cesar Ritengui. Sorry. And Julie Redman. Oh, I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. These were on items number 32, which was continued to the next meeting, tabled to the next meeting. However, since it was tabled at this time, are we still able? Cards are not effective then. I thought they could still speak. I believe if the item's on the agenda, the person can still speak to that item. And I'm back now. My mistake. Since the item was on the agenda, we have cards for item number 32. Ms. Rhonda Whalen, Terry House, Cesar, I'm sorry, I can't spell your, say your last name, and Ms. Julie Redmond. Ms. Whalen?
Since you've already continued the item, I'll wait until next time to make my comment in the interest of time.
Thank you. Terry House? Ms. Redmond?
I'm going to go ahead and speak to it since you're going to, I may or may not be at the meeting next time. With regard to this item 32, Trustee Winston, the $3.5 million, you need to take a closer look at what positions they're bringing back. The program specialists, the special ed directors, those are desperately needed positions right now. You're already stretching the limit on personnel in the classrooms. You can't afford to stretch the limit in special ed. Thank you.
Thank you. Cesar?
Next meeting.
How do you say your last name?
Cesar Lapp. I was just speaking for him. Don't ask me.
Thank you. I do move now on to item number 33. We had a motion by Mr. Lopez Maddox and a second by Mr. Winston. We have cards on item number 33 to speak. Ms. Whalen and Ms. Erin Kutnick.
CUSD currently employs 5 legal firms, and now you're going to discuss adding a 6th. Most of you prior to your election criticized CUSD for the massive amount of money that was being spent on legal fees in the district. We have parents here who want to see CSR reinstated. I have classified workers who want to keep their jobs, and reducing our legal fees could help save a job or a program. It's appalling that you'd consider spending a minimum of $390 an hour for legal services to fight a lawsuit that wouldn't have been filed if you'd made an effort to work with Mr. Carter. It's offensive to CSEA that you've chosen to hire a lawyer to sit at our negotiating table. We've never had a lawyer at our table. The cost for that is $180 an hour, and most of our employees don't even make that in a day or a week. Finally, I heard that there's a political connection between the board members and this law firm, so I would urge you to go back to the drawing board and find somebody else. Thank you.
Ms. Kutnick?
I'm sure you've all heard the saying, if it looks like a duck, it walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Already tonight, you were confronted with obvious evidence of a very suspicious relationship between this board and John Stevens at Keenan and Associates. Now you are planning to hire a law firm, Loose Forward. Just so happens that that law firm employs your friend and political supporter, Steve Knobloch. How can this possibly be considered an ethical, honest, and transparent relationship? It cannot. It smacks of the same type of cronyism that you accused the previous board, and it's not acceptable. I strongly encourage you to hold yourselves to the highest standards and hire a different law firm where there is absolutely no conflict of interest, apparent or otherwise. Otherwise, quack, quack.
Trustee Bryson?
Several things here. First of all, what my concern was when I was elected almost 3 years ago now to the board was not that the board didn't need legal, because anything involves 52,000 students almost and the largest employment group of people in the whole county is going to have legal issues. It's like a city, many cities, 9 cities. What disturbed me from the beginning, since I had done legal work for all of our many corporations before my husband died, was that the billing was outrageous, and when we totaled it up, would have taken 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks of the year. And because I had dealt with billing in New York, Miami, and here, it was easy to spot. And we all, at that point, could see that something had to be done, and different firms had to be hired, and they had to be told, do not overcharge our district. We are educating children here, and we need every dollar. But I found egregious and outrageous overbilling. The firm that was involved in that with this district only, I believe, has one case left because they used lower-level attorneys and charged higher-level prices. And unless you're involved in that world, it's very difficult to spot overbilling of that type. The firm involved here, I personally sat with them because of my background and asked them to do major reductions across the board. They're not charging for their travel time. They reduced their fees at my request personally because of our concern once again. However, if we do not have a first-rate attorney, this district could potentially lose $500,000, $1 million, and a lot more since we are in this time and place involved in a case. So I would also tell you, do I know an individual who happens to be a part of that firm? Yes. But I also have to tell you that I know individuals in over 35 different firms here. It would be impossible to have anyone in this county that I didn't meet at some point in my career in this county. Was it chosen because of that individual? No. In the conversation that I personally had with this attorney, I grilled him very hard because the future of a lot of our programs hangs in the quantity of money done or not done by this attorney, whether he succeeds in the case or doesn't succeed in the case. So knowing someone does not necessarily mean that you have accepted the talent of another person in that firm. And everyone was looked at and their backgrounds and their ability very intensely because of the case we're involved in.
Trustee Winston?
2 points. The budgeted expense for legal services for this past school year was $1.6 million. Actuals to date, according to a spreadsheet Mr. Leb sent me today, is just a shade over $1 million. So we're way off, way lower than the budget. We are making strides. The stable of law firms that's been doing work for this district in many cases, they could do better. A lot of the cases take way too long to conclude, and that's going to probably change going forward. That's one of the goals of this board, is early dispute resolution. Lawyer we're hiring, it's not so much a law firm, but a lawyer, Philip Cossey, has been doing this kind of work for 25-plus years, has an impeccable track record. I interviewed many lawyers. He stood out, and he's going to do a great job. And he knows I'll be watching, and if he lets us down, we won't hesitate to change horses. And that's going to be true of all our professional service providers. So I have confidence in this lawyer. He'll do a great job for his client, and I have no doubt that he will represent the constituents well. And I've told him that we're not spending $500,000 to save $500,000, and he understands what I mean.
Any other comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? 7-0. Item passes. Item number 34. Agenda item placed by local resident. Dr. Lackey.
Good evening again.
wanted to divert for a moment. To the critics of the board, I'd like to remind them I have a long history of attendance at board meetings. I wish some of them had witnessed the spectacle of the prior boards and the superintendent who all of them conducted all of the action items behind closed doors, much to the frustration of the public. And so it's a welcome change to see you guys have a difference of opinions, because they voted 5-0 for years, because I checked all their voting records. So let them stand back and check these records and see what they find out. Anyway, with regard to attorney fees, I'm concerned about special education. I hope that there's not going to be any, you know, I know you have to cut, but I also know that we have federal mandates in special education, and we have to be very cautious in what we do there. Now, moving on to my agenda topic. I present to you tonight figures with the help of Mr. Lebs and Ms. Booz and Ms. Hatchell. I appreciate the efforts they made to give me all the data, but I think I compiled some $125,660. I couldn't figure out what the settlement of $22,500 was all about, but I'm thinking there's a lot of money pouring out of this district into these alliances. One is the Orange County Special Education Alliance, and the other is the California School Boards Alliance, Educational Alliance. And, you know, we're not in a position to be funding actions in other districts. In fact, we funded an action against one of our own parents. And I abhor that kind of thing, because my taxpayers' monies being used to persecute one of our own parents. And that is really way off the map. So anyway, I plead with you to take a very close look at the our participation in these alliances, pull back, get out of them, get the money back, and use this money to keep our kids, our teachers, and keep ourselves solvent. Thank you.
Thank you. That ends our open session portion. We recess into closed session at this time. Thank you.